would be Bradshaw, and that would be the WWE Hall of Famer, Oklahoma's favorite son, Mr. Gerald Briscoe, and this is Best of the Best, where we talk about some of the most iconic wrestling matches in the history of the business. And this week, we've got a great one. We have got Viva La Raza, Eddie Guerrero, versus the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar, No Way Out. Unbelievable match, Mr. Briscoe.
That's right, John. And you know, Eddie, of course, ties into your career so much, and you can see some of the growth that he's making. But what I'm looking at, too, is we got a pretty young Brock Lesnar here. And Brock is kind of on his own. And you can kind of see that personality that Brock is bringing out nowadays in his interviews and promo skills that we're going to see here shortly. So we're in for a hell of a treat with this match.
Yeah, we are. And Josh, if you'll cue it up and get it rolling, we're going to listen to one of the greatest promos leading up to a championship matches you'll ever hear.
For Eddie Guerrero, and here's the tale of tape. And I'll tell you, size advantage goes to Brock Lesnar. I'm not sure if I'd even give Eddie the quickness advantage. I personally think Brock is just as quick as Eddie, but Eddie's got a little bit more experience.
Brock Lesnar is the WWE champion. For Eddie Guerrero, tonight offers a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, a chance to win the championship. For the first time ever on network television, a Royal Rumble match. The winner gets a shot at the WWE title and No Way Out. Here's the double team. Rikishi eliminated.
Wow.
We're down to two. Kurt Angle and Eddie Guerrero. Kurt Angle.
Oh, my God.
The apron almost eliminated. And a right hand by Latino. Kurt Angle's in trouble. Another right hand by Eddie Guerrero.
Kurt might be playing possum.
Angle going to suplex Eddie Guerrero.
And he's going. And he's done.
Eddie Guerrero's going to be eliminated here. Eddie Guerrero just countered. In front, Kurt Angle. Into the ring.
The hell's he doing?
Kurt Angle eliminated. Eddie Guerrero has got a shot at the title. Latino Heat is heading to San Francisco to meet Brock Lesnar at No Way Out for the WWE Championship.
Congratulations, Eddie Guerrero. But let me tell you something. I am not afraid of you.
The only thing I have going for me is that every obstacle that's been put in front of me, I have overcome.
Come No Way Out. You're not fighting the odds, Eddie. You're fighting me. I really hope you are addicted. Addicted to losing. Because at No Way Out, you're gonna get your fix.
Truth is, Brock, I am an addict. But you know what, Brock? I am beating those demons. I am overcoming those obstacles. I disgraced my race. I disgraced my family. And I disgraced myself. I came to a point in my life where it was do or die. Day by day, I have earned my way back into this ring. When I step into this ring, yeah, bro, I am addicted. I'm addicted to the high that I get from them. I'm addicted to the do or die feeling, Holmes, that I'm gonna have at No Way Out, because I'm an addict and I'll do anything and run over anybody that it's gonna take to get that around my waist and get my high at No Way Out and become the WWE champion. Ora levanto!
I'd call that a heck of a promo, wouldn't you, Mr. Briscoe?
Oh, John, I mean, it's one of those goosebumps that we all get in the back, you know, when we appreciate talent just like the fans do. And when they lay their hearts out like Eddie and Brock, I mean, it's just mind-blowing backstage to look around and look at the expression on different guys' face and see the intensity that the promo builds up. And we're seeing Brock Lesnar at an early stage of his career come in and do some of the stuff that we're seeing nowadays at his career. So he always had it. It's just that he didn't need it because we always had him mouthpiece.
Yeah, you had a mouthpiece, which is kind of unusual because normally you give a mouthpiece like that that the champion or whoever it is doesn't talk hardly at all because they can't talk. But Brock can. He could then and he can now. It's just you just had a great team with him and Paul Heyman.
Correct. Now, this is going to be a heck of a match. Let's get rolling in this thing, Josh. The emotions that both of these guys have that they displayed in that promo, now they're going to come in this action here. Brock, what a beast. I mean, that's an overused term, of course, with Brock Lesnar, but look at that. Look at that beast right there. How would you like to be a 17-year-old college freshman looking across the mat at somebody like that?
And thinking, how did I draw this?
Yeah. And the story, you know, Brock using that power, you know, Eddie's so bright now. That's, you know, a lot of Eddie's assets that he was so bright in the ring and he just knew how to make each and every opponent. When you're small like Eddie and myself, you learn how to work with these beasts or you get eat up by them, you know. And so Eddie's definitely not going to get eat up because he fights back.
Yeah, and it's a real art. X-Pac had that art. Right. X-Pac knew exactly how to work with big guys and always make it make sense. You know, just little things in matches, you know, where the little guy shoots the big guy off, it just – and it kills the realism of the match. Look at this backdrop. Holy cow. You know, Barry Windham used to take that huge high backdrop.
And Barry's 6'7" or whatever he is, and he could take the highest. He always scared me. I always thought he'd gonna break his leg because usually he was so damn long he would catch his legs and the ropes crossed from him.
I worked with Barry Windham one time, and he goes, "Press slam me, kid." And I got a bad shoulder from football, and I said, "I don't know if I can." And he, before I knew it, he's up on top of he put himself up there.
He was another one of those phenomenal athletes like Brock. I mean, you know, what do you mean compare Barry with Brock? Because of that athlete, Barry might not have had the college credential, but Barry was a world-class athlete. I mean, all he needed was a break in football, and he probably would have made it.
That's right. And smooth as he can be. Randy Orton reminds me a lot of Barry Windham, how smooth Randy is.
There's a group of those young guys like Randy and Edge and those guys, they all had that similar makeup in them, you know, that athletic, long, lean body. Look at Brock's power again. That's hard to do, isn't it, John? Just catch
that is almost next to impossible. You know, and Brock just caught it. That wasn't leverage. You know, you hope the guy lands on your shoulders. Eddie missed his shoulders a little bit because he was spinning, and Brock just caught him. That's power.
That's power.
Look at this. You know, people talk about, you know, Eddie being a smaller guy, and he is compared to Brock. But Eddie was still 230 pounds or
Eddie,
more.
Eddie was still a big guy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You compare Eddie to a normal person just walking around. Eddie's a big guy. Not compared to Brock or Big Show, but.
But when you're in a world of 265 and 300 pounders, man, you know, you're 230 or 220, you know, have a disadvantage. But, you know, that ability and that intestinal fortitude will make up for it 99% of the time. And the confidence. And Eddie certainly wasn't lacking for confidence. You couldn't tell Eddie he was a small guy or he'd bite you.
Yeah, he'd be happy to.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of some like huge brawl one time, and I think Chavo, his nephew, told me, he goes, "That looks like our Thanksgiving." And you know, here's what's so great about this match. You know, this is the ultimate underdog story. Normally, you go out there, you shine the baby face, you polish them up, make them look good. But they're telling the story so well of fighting from underneath. And Brock is just guzzling Eddie right now. Eddie keeps fighting back, but everything Eddie does, Brock overpowers him.
And, you know, I really think that was probably Eddie's choice because Eddie knew he wasn't Brock Lesnar. He knew he wasn't that size. So as a babyface like that, you want to go out and you want to be on that receiving end so you can start, you know, getting your game plan, getting your philosophy going. And when you're selling like that, people just don't realize a salesmanship like Eddie Guerrero, it's so much easier when you make that pop, that comeback after you've gone down and give them a right. Single like that. And Eddie was so bright, as you know, in the ring. I mean, there were very few guys could match his ring intelligence.
And you look at it now, they haven't done anything fantastic. It's just been good, solid work. And they've really started to build the heat on Brock. They haven't gone over the top rope. They haven't done all kinds of crazy stuff. They've just done simple David versus Goliath story, which is one of the easiest ones and one of the best to tell.
And this match here, you know, let's don't forget the historical value of it. It kind of sets the tone of a guy's size like Eddie and like Chris and like the other Chris. And, you know, those guys like that can get the people and get the confidence of the people and make them believe that they can beat somebody like Brock Lesnar. So it opens the door. That's the historical significance of this match here.
Yeah, and you remember he brought over Eddie and the guys from WCW, and, you know, Eddie's first match, he breaks his arm.
Right. And I felt so bad for him. Remember that? He did that frog splash. Man, what a beautiful frog splash, and shattered his forearm.
And they came over pretty much as cruiserweights. And then you realize that these guys have huge value as heavyweights.
As performers in the ring, I mean, just, you know, as all around good professional. They just, you know, the work ethic. And I remember that time, you could just hear those crowds starting to build for Eddie, for Ray, for Jericho, for Benoit. You could hear them starting to bowl, you know, get behind them and everything. And it was such a wonderful feeling. You were just happy for these guys that made that move over to us.
Brock has no idea how strong he is. It's just unbelievable how Brock is manhandling Eddie Guerrero here. And Little Hebner, what a good referee.
Oh, little Brian Hebner, right?
Brian Hebner, yeah.
Brian worked his way into that because he was the craps when he first came to us there. But with the mentoring of his uncles and the other crews that we had, the Jack Dones, and Mike Chiodas, and Jimmy Corderas, and all those tremendous referees we had. It's like a talent. If you don't rise to the occasion, you don't get put in matches like this. This
That's
is
an right. Yeah, because the referee has so much importance in these matches. You got to be able to relay messages. You got to relay time cues. You got so much you got to be able to do. And you got to be the liaison without letting the whole world know that you're the liaison communicating with the guys. And Brian became a really good, really good referee. I had Brian in so many of my matches. I love being out there with Brian. We had a fan jump in the ring.
You made it as a referee when the top guys started asking for you in their matches. When you started asking for Brian, we knew that he had made that step forward.
That's right. We were in after the heart attack angle with Eddie's mom, we were in San Bernardino or somewhere, and some fan jumped in the ring. And before Eddie or I could get to him, Brian had punted him like Pat McAfee. he punted the guy right in the face.
Wow.
Just like his dad. Earl would punch a fan in a heartbeat.
Earl loved it. I think Earl loved doing that. Now, Dave would try to talk him out of it, you know. And Earl and Brian just punched him. Brian got that from his old man, I'm sure.
And just, it's so, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world. You have the babyface fire back, and all of a sudden, you kill him. You know, that's just what Brock just did. It just, right when you get those people coming, you just crush them.
Just give them that little tease, man. Just get them right there. Boom.
As Skandar Akbar used to say, we're going to leave them just like they love it. Miserable.
Miserable.
And see, this has been almost all Brock. You know, it's not, but you got enough of Eddie fighting that it's just made this story fantastic.
Now, you see, when Brock came over there and Eddie, he watched the people in the crowd, they're starting to stand because they know Eddie's just right. You can see them dancing in the background there where they're trying to encourage Eddie to come on, come on. Because they know Eddie's got that fire, and they love it when he busts open.
And when Eddie shows my favorite, he shows it.
Yeah. My favorite move by Eddie is when he's doing that, the quick ratcha dance. You did it better than he did, though.
Yeah, I would tell him I did.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that innate charisma that you get with some guys that they have it or they don't. And see, once again, this is great psychology for those out there watching. Eddie is beat down, beat down, beat down, and Eddie makes a great move, but he doesn't do anything offensively. He does a great move by ducking out of the way, but Brock hurts himself and gives Eddie an opportunity, and you get some separation to let the people start getting behind Eddie.
Good thought there. That's exactly right. Now you got a chance to take advantage of that size and get a little momentum going.
And now you do that La Plancha over the top rope, and it makes perfect sense. You know, it, all of a sudden, Eddie, just out of desperation, I'm going to jump over the top rope on Brock because I don't have much else left. It's not where, hey, I'm going to stand here on this top rope and let people cheer until I jump over. It was that desperation move that it made sense. And that was their first big move, was that La Plancha over the top rope.
Exactly. It shows you don't need all those flip-flopping flies on 90 mile an hour.
No, you need Shakespeare.
And these guys are giving us to us. Nice, 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 not a slow tempo, but just the right speed where it's not boring you to death with what they're doing, because they're not doing, as you said many times, they're not doing anything real exciting. They're doing the basic, but they're doing the basics better than anybody else at this point. Another little percussion move, you know, to get Brock down. Eddie's getting his breath back, coming back.
One thing that's so underrated about Brock is his ability to sell.
Right.
I mean, you look at Brock in between, he's grabbing his knee. Look at that. Eddie chopped his knee just a little bit, and Brock's selling it, letting people know that it's hurt. I don't know where the heck Brock got that, because he wasn't in the business that long, but he picked it up as fast as, like Kurt Angle, picked it up like no one I've seen.
Well, John, you know, you mentioned two guys. Brock's an NCAA champ. Kurt, an Olympic gold medalist and a two-time NCAA champion. These guys are athletes. They're all American athletes. And, you know, they're going to pick up stuff. They're used to being coached. And they're used to taking the fast lane because they're quick learners. And, you know, wrestling is wrestling.
What a great counter. Yeah. This is such a good match.
Now, all right, he's working on that leg that, you know, Brock went over the top. Boom, he hurt his leg. Then he come back in, Eddie kicked the leg, so it hurt again. So now they're taking advantage of that. That's part of the storytelling. And, brother, that's a stiff hold there. You got that.
I hate that hold.
You got your heel up next to your chin, and that chin's coming back to your heel.
Cena,
there ain't
used
no
to put
comfortable
that
position there, is there, Don?
Cena used to put that on me, and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't do anything. Oh my God!
Body's laying right across your torso too, where you can't take those deep breaths.
That's right. That hurts. He can't breathe. It's like that stupid camel clutch.
I'm gonna tell the Sheik you said it's a stupid move.
Jabroni,
he's coming to find you, Jabroni.
That's right.
That Jabroni Mr. Shaw's, he don't know what it is.
That's right.
Back to the leg there, telling that story.
Yeah, but he's going for that Indian deathlock. He wasn't going for the figure four there. Oh. He had it underneath. Something not seen very often.
Now, you know, people say Eddie's small. Look at Eddie's body. I mean, that's not a small body.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a powerful man there.
And as we always used to say, when a guy grabbed the right of anything, wrong limb, amigo.
Yeah.
Because
Because the Mexicans would work the right arm and the right leg, and the Americans would work the left arm and the left leg. And the Mexicans generally, when they were in the States, would work the left, you know, because that, because you, everybody's almost everybody except for you is right-handed. And so you want to work the non-punching arm, but Eddie's working his right leg.
And Brock's so young, he don't know. He's just selling.
No, Brock's just selling. And it's just such a great psychology. All you do is put a chink in the big beast armor with that leg move.
Eddie makes that move look so seamless there.
I did that with him, I don't know how many times, maybe 100 times. And it was like he wasn't even there. Wow. You just go to lift him, the next thing you know, he's there.
Wow. A death lock again.
No, that's the upside. That's the figure four. Yeah.
Damn it, Eddie.
Now you got the giant down. Now the giant selling. It's just such a great story that they're telling.
Now this is another move there, John. You can back this up. It's painful as hell. Both of your legs are intertwined there, and you're bound up there, and it's hard for your calves and your muscles to kind of spread out and relax, but they're all balled up there.
Yeah, it is. It is. I hated sitting in this thing, you know, working it, trying to get out of it. It was miserable. And now it's getting to where it's almost even. You know, now Brock has sold enough that both competitors now, after Eddie's been beat down for so long, it's starting to get where it's almost even, and Eddie has almost the chance. Where at the beginning of the match, he didn't have one. That's what I mean about, and you mean about this great story that they're telling. Now he's working the left leg. He's switching.
Poor Brock.
Now he's put it on the other side. You know, well, he was on the other side.
I like the way Eddie just seamlessly switches from that working that toe up to the neck there. Just turn of his body and boom. And you're in jeopardy all of a sudden.
You know, it's these guys that do it like that, like you and Kurt and Eddie. They know so much. It's so easy to go from one move to the other. It's like the European chain wrestling, you know, like William Regal or Dave Taylor or Finley or St. Clair, you know, that European style of going from one move to the other.
Well, here's some brutal suplexes here too, belly to back.
Yeah.
Suplexes are so fragile to pull off. You got to be just right on your time, or somebody gets hurt, as we've seen here recently. They're really, really difficult moves to do, and the skill guy is doing perfectly.
Yeah, that's right. And you want to have somebody like Brock, who, if something is awry, they can make up for it with strength.
With the power, yeah.
That is a spine buster right there. Holy cow.
Wow.
And you know what's amazing about this match? And you see it some with Roman today, one of the guys that's really over, is you got a lot of holds being worked. And look at the people. They're into every bit of it.
They're into it.
I mean, they understand the jeopardy that they're in. They picked the right time in the match to go into the hold.
That's right, John. And that timing to go into a hold like that's very critical to a match's tempo. And these guys here, they just felt it in the ring. You can feel when.
Hey, look, let me stop. Look at Eddie calling a spot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, the tempo of going into these holds there, and you know, a lot of people, well, they're rest holds. They're not rest holds. They're holds to describe. They're describer holds to me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Vince and many people always would say, you know, if you do something, give people a chance to digest it. Give people a chance to turn and say, hey, did you see that? Oh, my God, that was incredible. But if you're doing one thing to the next, you never allow the crowd to catch up.
Not only the crowd, but you announce team and out there too. You know that, John. When a guy gets so far ahead of you, you feel like you're behind all the time, and you're not lagging behind. It's just they're doing stuff so quick. But these guys are giving the announcers time to describe what they're doing and what they're feeling.
That's right. And again, look at the way that Eddie ended up on the top rope. He drops down, he drops Brock into the turnbuckle, and he just rolls and climbs straight up. It's not one of these things where you make a big presentation about, I'm going to the top rope. It just, you took advantage of a situation.
Like falling from a large tree.
I think Brock potatoed himself in the turnbuckle. And Brock will run into anything.
I know, and he does potato himself a lot, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's busted himself open more often than anybody else has.
Well, who in the hell in their right mind would bust him open?
That's exactly right.
You know, that people can see, even though all Brock has a waist lock on him, but they know that weight that Brock's putting out down there with the shoulder is causing Eddie not to be able to recover right. So that's an effective hold there.
Yeah, and Eddie selling his butt off makes it too. You know, Eddie has that crying look. I mean, it's just a masterclass in storytelling. And what's amazing about this is Brock is new to the business. And this is an incredible story. I understand he's out there and one of the greatest of all time, but he's doing his part.
He's more than doing his part. I'm enjoying watching Brock's facial expressions and coming from a collegiate background like he did. You know, that's hard to do for somebody that's had all that amateur training.
Right, because the one thing you want to do is not sell anything. We call it a glimpse of Chimmel there. Hopefully, they can Josh can edit that out.
I hope that's the only glimpse we get. Please go cameo.
That's right. Was it Chimmel that got super kicked by Shawn Michaels that time?
Yeah.
The boys really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was the Hour Iron Man match, right?
That's right. Yeah. Brett ducked out of the way, and Chimmel takes it on one of his chins.
One of his chins, yeah.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, when Eddie turned around and saw that blood coming from Brock's nose, he got a little nervous.
Yeah. I always said when you ask somebody, are you okay? You know they're okay. What you're really asking is, how mad are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know they're okay. You just want to know how mad they are.
Yeah. And you could tell by they're okay.
That's right. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. Uh-oh.
Eddie's always a pleasure to watch. I mean, I love going back and watching his matches. I just love the style. You know, it's a combination of so many different genres of our business. Eddie was an outstanding amateur wrestler in his day, coached by Chavo Senior, Chavo Classic.
Oh, I didn't know Chavo was his coach.
Yeah, I think he won the state title under him. I'm sure I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, but
what, the internet correct somebody?
No, never.
The three amigos.
There they come. Moving forward, I had no issues at all with that Logan Paul kid doing these things. I just thought it was a tribute to Eddie myself, and I thought it was wonderful. Because the guy did them great, you know.
Yeah, me too. You know, I never had a problem with guy. I met Logan Paul when he was there, and he was so respectful and just nice as he could be. I've never had a problem with anybody coming to the business part-time when they have so much respect for the business like Logan Paul does, you know, and they work their ass off. You know, if they come in and they treat a business just like a sideshow or something, I have a problem with it. But those guys that come in that work hard and put in good matches, I think it's wonderful for the business.
I do too, and they're welcome.
Yeah, and very well.
There was that great frog splash again by Eddie. And Brock rose out of the way, and Eddie getting to sell it a little bit. Now you think, you know, we're getting to the end of it. You know you're getting to the end of it. But is Eddie?
Yeah, the fans pretty much know. Once you miss a finish, now you're getting to the finish.
At F5, there you go.
F5, you knocked down Little Hebner.
Now you're really, as a fan, you're really, okay, something, what's happening?
Look at the fans. They're looking for the aisle to see if anybody's coming. Look at them. Look at them. They're looking. They know something's coming. They don't know what.
Wake up there, Brian.
Look at them. Look, all these fans are looking straight for the aisle. Looking for help. Yeah.
Brock gets frustrated. Okay, nobody here to count. I'll get him. What's he going to do now? Here we go. I'm going to get a weapon if he's going to be done. Why the hell a 300-pounder need a weapon?
They gave Ken Shamrock a bat one time and had him choke me out. I said, why are you giving the world's most dangerous man a bat?
Of all people.
Of all people.
Oh, this is lie, cheat, and steal, right?
That's right. That old title, that was the old traditional title. You know, after Cena got it for me, he turned it into the spinner belt, and I've changed it, you know, several times since then. But that was the old title.
I love that belt.
Me too.
Is it a belt? There's what they're looking for right there. Where in the hell did it come from? Okay, now they're thinking, now what's happening?
Now it's all even. You know, this is what's the great part about a great finish is both guys are out. And so you don't know what's going to happen next.
Oh, man, Funk used to call that the scorched earth finish here. All the bodies down, scorching earth. Bodies everywhere. He used to have the old Wild West finishes, man, where there are 10 bodies in the ring. Like, scorched earth tonight.
Look at the crowd. They are getting into it. And they are selling a long time.
Grab that leg. One, two, kicks out. Damn it, Brian. This is a build here. This is the fun part of a finish, isn't it, Tom? Where you just
Look at Eddie. Yeah. Oh my God, this is the greatest part of the match ever. When you're in it, because all the work's done. Yeah. You've got the crowd. You got everything done. Now it's just theatrics.
It's playtime now.
Yeah. Now you know you got them. You're thinking, okay, hay's in the barn. Work's done. It's time to have some fun. And look at Eddie. This is all Shakespeare here. Same with Brock too, and with Little Hebner.
Yeah, look at Brock playing his.
Look at Brock. They're just milking it. Look at the people. They're only
they both fill that crowd. Like we always say, you got to fill that crowd. They're filling it here. Whoops. Little deploy here. F5 coming up.
DDT onto the belt.
DDT out of the F5.
Onto the title. Onto the title.
We can call it belt here, John. I won't tell.
Joshua made stooges.
Yeah.
Frog splash!
Yeah. Wake up, Brian.
All of a sudden, the referee comes to.
Oh, look at the crowd, though. Look at that crowd. Wow.
That is insane. I don't think anybody expected Eddie to win. I mean, I think people thought he could win, but I don't think they really thought he would. Jimmy Tillis and Jimmy Noonan.
Two great guys there.
Oh, great guys. You know, Jimmy Noonan's sister is Peggy Noonan, who was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's a terrific writer, everything. Yeah, she writes all the time for different editorials and things.
Wait a minute, did you ever hear any Reagan speeches?
Yeah, she wrote it early in his presidency.
Okay, what is running? Okay.
And there's Eddie's mother. Well, I gave a heart attack.
You caused her to have a heart attack, didn't you? That lady right there.
That's right.
God, that nice was one of the most despicable things you ever did.
I gave her a heart attack.
I tell you what, man, we got
Mondo, those Mondo Guerrero brothers.
You know the Guerrero family. I mean, you know, we harp on Eddie and we hop on Chavos, the two Chavos, but they're Mondos, Hectors, and the old man. I mean, that entire family, historical family in that west southern Texas down there. I mean, you know, you mentioned wrestling. It's the Guerrero family or the Romero family. One of those two. They intertwine so much in our history.
Yeah, and Hector was a heck of a worker, man. You know, he was the gobbledygooker. You know, not that that.
Yeah, he got stuck with that damn gobbledygooker, and it kind of identifies his career, which is really unfortunate because the guy was a tremendous worker.
He was a great worker. And, you know, Chavo Jr., Eddie's nephew, not Chavo Classic, is now working, I think, doing the stunt coordination stuff for The Rock and Brian Gewirtz with that show. Well, you know, he came back because his uncles were in Hollywood first. Now, maybe he got that directly from The Rock. I don't know. His Chavo Jr. is certainly qualified to do it. He does a wonderful job. People rave about him. But his brothers, his uncles, Eddie's brothers, were in Hollywood years before doing stunt work and stunt coordination work. I mean, the Guerrero brothers are very talented guys.
Well, he's doing a heck of a job with that young Rock. And I think he did something with that Glow Wrestling too when they were being televised, when they did that series.
He did.
I think he was the coordinator of wrestling for that one too. So this family, I mean, they're a multi-talented family, and not just one of them. The talent wasn't just blessed with one of them. It was blessed in the entire family there.
Well, that was the first of a trilogy that we're doing on Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero, when he won the championship versus Brock Lesnar, the next night he walked out there, and you never know when somebody gets a championship, if that championship, they're going to grow into it, or if the championship is going to swallow them up. The next night when Eddie Guerrero walked out, that place went so ballistic. Jerry, I know you remember. It was I hardly ever heard a pop like that. And I heard Hogan. I heard Stone Cold, The Rock. That pop that Eddie got the next night was world class.
You can't top them. I mean, that feeling, and everybody was just backstage. Everybody was so proud of Eddie. I mean, it was what an accomplishment. Here this guy come in, as you say, what part of that invasion deal, and kind of just lingered there, and and all of a sudden he started getting that steam, and you started listening to the crowd and how he was getting over. And pretty soon Vince had that smile on his face, nodding his head, yeah, let's go with this guy. And when he gave that approval, go with him, man, Eddie took that ball and he scored.
Yeah, that was one of the matches that we're doing in the trilogy. Depends on when you're watching this. The other matches that we have also on our YouTube channel that'll come and play right after this will be when Eddie Guerrero found a way to carry me at the Staples Center, our first big pay-per-view match that was so bloody. And then Eddie versus Ray, one of the greatest storylines ever, fighting over the custody of Dominic. All that's available on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and like it. For Mr. Briscoe, the Oklahoma legend, WWE Hall of Famer, I'm Brad Shaw. Thanks for joining us.